Welcome, everyone. The Conference Committee on Senate File 2519 will come to order. We should probably do real quick introductions because everybody doesn't know everybody's staff. So I'm Senator Anderson.
I'm Representative Hilstrom.
Bob Ela from House Research.
Matt Gehring from House Research.
Peter Strohmeyer, Committee Administrator.
Representative Andrew Falk.
Jim Abler from NOCA.
Allison Pinebrook, Senator Anderson's LA.
Don Jarovsky, Senator Anderson's Committee Administrator.
Darlene Sliwa, Senate Counsel and Research.
Senator Kevin Dahl, District 25.
Senator Katie Sieben.
State Senator Scott Dibble.
I'm Tom Bodern with Senate Counsel.
John Fuller, Senate Counsel.
Great, thank you. Well, I know the House has session at 2, and I think we can hopefully get a lot done before then, if the House can stay till then. I know there's a caucus, but as much as we can get done would be great, because this is a pretty simple, I think the issues that are in front of us are pretty simple. And the House took up the Senate language when they passed the bill, so the underlying bill, as it left the Senate, is identical. So the language that we ended up passing that relates to disclosure of ratepayer, of things that are charged to ratepayers, is identical language. And the only difference between the bill, and I'll have counsel say this more authoritatively with more detail, but my quick summary is the only difference is these two are, it's one election-related statement that the House put on as an amendment that, and there's two parts to it, or there were two separate amendments that were combined into that section that relates to the use of ratepayer money to influence elections or ballot initiatives. So I think we'll need to have some discussion about that. So I'd like to start by asking our Senate counsel just to review what's in the bill, and then perhaps House staff could talk about the amendment. And what, if you have any, if you could give us any description of what it does and or what the intention was. I guess it was Representative Fox's amendment, one of the pieces of it, so we could ask for an explanation of the intention and take any more discussion input from staff. We'll ask the Public Utilities Commission to speak to how they, the practices that they follow under current law related to these issues, and then we'll see if there's any other testimony. So that's what I'm hoping to get done first, and then we can have some discussion about how to proceed from there. Does that sound good?
Perfect.
Great. Mr. Fuller, do you want to just go through the bill, please?
Madam Chair's member, I think the bill you might want to look at is the unofficial endorsement that was prepared for this, because that does contain the same language. And if you turn to page 2, you'll see on the bottom there, that's section 3, that is the House amendment that the Chair referred to. I suppose just as a little background, and utilities make all kinds of expenditures, and so there are utility expenditures, and then there are utility expenditures that they can charge to their ratepayers. And so that's a key thing to remember. What this bill does contains, well, section 1 is simply a data privacy provision that catalogs where a classification of data appears in the statute. That's common data practices policy, so that when you go to Chapter 13, you can find where all the data is classified. So the heart of the bill is Section 2. And if you, I think the first sentence is key, the commission, that's the Public Utilities Commission, may not allow as operating expenses of public utilities travel, entertainment, and related employee expenses. And here's the key, that the commission deems unreasonable and unnecessary for the provision of utility service. So it's not an absolute ban on recovering travel and entertainment expenses. It's a subset of those expenses that aren't necessary or reasonably incurred for the provision of service. And that's the rate-making concept in Minnesota. Ratepayers aren't liable for things that have nothing to do with the service that the utility is obligated to provide them. Rates have to be just and reasonable and necessary provision of service. And then, so the commission can allow some. So what has happened recently was there was difficulty that some of the regulators and other parties had in examining the data that backed up those expenditures. So the next part of the bill requires the utility to file fairly detailed reports on a category of expenses, with the key again on line 19 and 20 that the commission may ask for more. So this is sort of the threshold level of what they have to do. That's another key. The commission is in control of this process. You can see that on lines 2.9 to 2.12, you have the detail that's required in reporting this information. And in Senate committee on 2.12, there was a concern that this might be a duplicative venture reporting, and so they could use, you can see reading down from 2.12, that sentence, that they can use otherwise existing records. They don't have to create new records if there are records available that satisfy this requirement. On paragraph C on line 2.21, there's an exception. It classifies the data, as mentioned in section 1. This is the data classification as public, which is the usual case. But then there's an ability for the PUC or an administrative law judge to issue a protective order or to make a not public data if they find that the interests of the public in having this data is outweighed by the competitive advantage to the utility of keeping this information private. And that's the bill. Then if you turn to the bottom there, that is the section. I'll turn over to the House, except just to remember that we do have two categories of expenses. You have what they spend, what they can spend for, and I think the concern was that the election laws had changed and they could start spending for things that they otherwise couldn't have, and then there's the notion of what they can recover for ratepayers. So it's good to keep that in mind. That's a summary, Madam Chair.
That's great. Thank you very much. So that's basically sections 1 and 2. Are there any questions about those two sections? All right. Mr. Eloff, what was your name?
Matt Guerin.
And are you counsel for
which?
Thank you. Elections. Okay, so either one of you, whoever would like to address section 3 and just advise us a little bit on that would be great.
Madam Chair, since we're fortunate enough to have the author of the amendment with us today, I think I'd defer to him at least to begin with for an explanation, especially as you mentioned, of intent.
Absolutely. I think that's a good place to start. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was brought to me as an issue that people are concerned about with the Citizens United part, and they feel that we shouldn't allow utilities to recover expenditures from ratepayers specifically when they can expend funds from their general treasury, basically, or what they have earned as profits to influence elections. And this was brought up as a way to deal with that they couldn't go and put additional burden on the ratepayers to influence an election or a ballot initiative, and that was the reason for the amendment. And as I understand, I'd like to have the PUC come up and confirm this, but this is current practice, but is basically part of this amendment codifies that into law.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Falk's amendment was, however, amended by Representative Anderson. And Representative Anderson's amendment would permit the reimbursement of election expenses if it was to advocate the approval or defeat of a ballot question. That also was adopted.
Okay, well, I think we should have some discussion about what the current law is on this so we can be really sure whether this complies with current law, is consistent, expands it. I would be concerned. I appreciate what you're trying to do here in terms of not allowing ratepayer reimbursement for campaign and election-related expenses. I don't think that's appropriate. But I'm not sure that we should allow it for ballot questions. I don't think that would be a good road to go down to open it up so that we can, that ratepayers would have to pay for those. So they seem to be sort of contradictory in their intent, the two phrases.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Falk.
I'm thinking that in the quickness in which the amendment to the amendment was prepared, that it may not have been put together in a way that is sufficient to meet our concerns, and for that reason, I think that when we get to the point, we might have to go and remove some of the language because it I think it was put together rather hastily.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why don't I move Section 1 and 2, given they're identical in the House and the Senate, and then we can really spend our time focusing on Section 3 once we have Section 1 and 2 off the table.
Actually, I think that's a great idea, Representative Hillstrom, and that would be helpful just to set those issues aside. Members, those, as I mentioned, those are identical. They're both in the House and Senate. We had an extensive discussion on this bill in committee, in a number of committees, and a great deal of compromise happened with the utilities on this bill from when it was originally introduced. So I think it's we should adopt it as it is. Why don't we discuss that motion, since we have that motion, and then we can go back. I know there were some other questions that I assume were related to Section 3. Is there any discussion on Representative Hillstrom's motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Excellent. Well, we're two-thirds of the way done. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was presiding over the debate, so I didn't get a chance to say anything about this amendment while it was being debated, although I was trying to draft notes as quickly as I could to get them up to my colleagues. But I think that the last sentence of Section 3 doesn't make a lot of sense, and it adds a complexity to the examination that shouldn't be there. The question is it a matter of opinion of whether it's going to increase costs? Is it short-term costs? Is it long-term costs? Who gets to decide whether those the ballot question, if passed, would increase the cost? So I just think there are a lot of problems in that sentence that I would have really liked to talk about on the House floor, but didn't get a chance, so I feel better that I could answer.
Thank you. Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, and maybe I can help you understand what the intent was, since I sit not too far from the person who wrote it. The whole topic got to be kind of controversial, and I have little time in the elections committees, and but the whole topic about what corporations can do and not is very controversial on both sides, and it's yet to be interpreted what that means in totality, and there'll be cases, I suppose. When this gets brought forward, when the original amendment was brought forward, which was the first sentence, that was controversial to our side generally because they saw it as a way to go after this. And you know how that, I don't have to restate the controversy from both sides about that, who wants it, who doesn't want it, what's it going to mean. No one actually knows yet, but it's controversial. And so that drew the fire about the first part. I think there was agreement about candidates. And I think that everybody agrees, that may be the common ground, that's the consensus point at the end here. A ballot question is another matter. And just so you know, I voted with most of you on most of the green stuff. So I'm here friendly to the topic. People on my side of the aisle aren't so friendly and or have their own concerns, which I think are valid in their own way. But so let's say a cap and trade thing was on the ballot. And the utilities would sense that's going to increase something. And as a good board member of the utility, they would think, well, this is going to be bad for a utility. It's going to cost money. Never mind the benefit. So that was the reason for the second part. So they would feel like, as a good fiduciary of their corporation, that they should engage in that. That's the intent of number two. Just to help you understand where they were coming from in that.
Representative Abler, I appreciate your explanation. I guess, to me, there's, you know, two very different issues. One is whether the utility should be able to participate in that ballot question and contribute to that, which would be a very controversial question, as you said, and may or may not change under current law because of the Supreme Court decision. But the second question, I think the question that really we're addressing, is whether you and I or anyone else should pay for that on their electric and heat bills. And I think I would be really surprised if folks on your side of the aisle would think that they should, or that they should pay for that ability for the utilities to protect their interests on a cap-and-trade, a ballot initiative or something like that. I mean, who should pay for that is really the question. What should it be, ratepayers?
Right. Well, Madam Chair, at the end of the day, the ratepayers pay everything anyway. The utilities have no pot of money that falls out of the sky. And I don't know about the Capitol and all that part, but it's not my topic, but as I sat by Mr. Beard, who's my seatmate, he says that the money has to come from somewhere. But I think that the concept that I can bring forward, which I understand a little bit, is that as a fiduciary of a group, if you know your prices are going to go up to the ratepayers, it would be a good investment of a small amount of ratepayer money to invest it to save even more. That's the rationale. Not that you accept it, that's just where they're coming from. That's the best I can do.
Well, I think it's pretty clear, and we'll have the PUC speak to this, that if ratepayers don't pay for it, then it comes off of shareholders' share of the, in their, whatever the profit margin is, that's where it would come from rather than from the ratepayers directly. So there is pretty established difference between those pots of money, and that's what our laws are designed to protect. So, okay, I saw some hands. Are there any other hands right now? Okay, maybe I said what you were going to say, perhaps. all right, why don't we, what I'd like to know is what does current law say about what expenses related to campaigns, elections, or ballot initiatives, what are permitted for ratepayers at this point in time? Can someone answer that?
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Fuller pretty much answered that in his introduction. Okay. when he cited the phrase on line 114 and 115, expenditures have to be deemed by the Commission reasonable and necessary for the provision of utility service. That's the test that the Commission uses in deciding which expenditures can be charged to ratepayers.
Okay. And then we also have, there's law that prevents recovery for advertising expenses. Does somebody want to say what that covers, Mr. Bodder?
Madam Chair, a different subdivision in the same section of statutes, section 216B.16, subdivision 8, prohibits recovery for certain types of advertising expenses, including advertising designed to influence or that has the effect of influencing public attitudes toward legislation or proposed legislation. And I think it's certainly possible that would include ballot questions.
Okay.
Mr. Fuller may have something to add to that.
All right, Senator Dibble.
Thanks. I'm just responding to that. I don't know that completely gets us there. That's advertising. But there are a lot of activities around influencing the outcomes of elections that don't constitute advertising, per se.
Sure.
And the thing to keep in mind, and you made this point a second ago, is this does not prohibit utilities from doing anything. It simply prohibits a dollar-for-dollar recovery directly from rates, building it in directly into rates, these kinds of activities. They need to figure out how to do these sorts of things. They figure that out within the margin that's allowed to them by the PUC for their profit making, which is usually around 10% per year. That's a pretty good profit, 10 to 11% per year. It's a pretty good profit. Rather than simply setting that aside and get the dollars directly reimbursed from the ratepayers for these activities. That's the sole question in front of us.
Okay. Let's see if the Public Utilities Commission, who is here from the PUC, would like to speak to this out. Welcome, Ms. Gonzalez. Welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you. How close do I need? Oh, there we go. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the conference committee. My name is Janet Gonzalez. I'm the energy unit manager at the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. Don't know quite where to start. I guess what I would say first is, as has been stated, and I'm certainly no expert on campaign law, that at the moment Minnesota law prohibits this anyhow. And one of the consequences of that is, no utility has ever come to the commission with an item labeled, cost to promote or defeat a candidate from public office. So we've never really ruled on that because nobody's ever come with a line item like that. So first of all, they can't do it anyhow. So they can't recover it from ratepayers. They can't do it at all. However, should the law, I think your question is, should the law be changed because of either the court decision or subsequent legislative changes to the statute, then what? And the only thing I can say right now is the things that are somewhat similar to this that the commission has ruled on. I believe it was already discussed that there's statutory direction in 216B16 sub 8 that prohibits certain types of advertising. Now, that I agree wouldn't cover everything, but it's in the ballpark of the kind of thing that we'd be talking about. The commission itself has looked at, in addition to advertising as is required under the statute, the commission also would look at dues expense that could have a lobbying component to it, charitable contributions that could potentially have a lobbying or a political component to it, and advertising. Those are the things that occur to me that are somewhat related to that. We recently, in the most recent commission, in the most recent CenterPoint rate case, disallowed all lobbying expenses, no matter what they were for. It's usually that hasn't come up as an issue, frankly. No one in my staff could remember for the last 10 or 15 years when the dues expense issue had ever come up. I remember it from 20 years ago when I was a child, there were a number of arguments about whether Edison Electric Institute, EEI, dues, whether some part of that should be disallowed in utility rates because some of that was to affect lobbying. And we did often disallow that. That hasn't even come up as an argument for so long because there's such a long-established policy of anything related to lobbying or political types of things to simply not be included in rates. So that's been the background, but as I said, there isn't really any law on the specific issue that's here because it's not allowed.
And that, Ms. Gonzalez, that's because of the just and necessary general, I mean, that's the legal principle that you're following or that the commissioners are following to say that it's not allowed?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just saying, as I said, the reason that we've never done direct ballot questions or at least direct, I don't think anyone's ever, put anything like that or anything about political candidates just because they're not allowed to do it anyhow. However, if they were allowed to do it, I'm almost sure the commission would disallow it, and they do it on general rate-making principles, not because of the statute that is there. It has to be used and useful in providing utility service. That general principle's long established in Minnesota and nationwide in regulatory circles, and certainly there can be debates on specifics. Some might argue that, if we lobby for this, if we lobby for additional LIHEAP funds, that's good, so you should allow those costs, those types of arguments, and that has some appeal. But you start to get into the weeds on that and say, $10 of this $300 was related to this, it just gets impossible. So, the commission's general philosophy has been utilities are primarily doing lobbying and those types of things on behalf of the corporation and the shareholders. It's not used and useful for providing electricity service, and we've generally disallowed it. But there isn't one statute specifically targeting each of those things. It's more general principles.
And thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. Do you see any problems with the language in Section 3? Or have any comments on that?
Well, the first, Madam Chair, the members of the committee, the first sentence, I don't think the commission would do that anyhow, but I guess that's certainly a legislative decision whether you want to just simply state that. The second sentence, again, this is more my opinion than an official opinion, is that it's problematic. You'd start to argue about for the same reasons I mentioned earlier, and I believe was stated very, very well by one of the members. Hate to take something so controversial, but take cap and trade. you're going to, I'm sure the members and some of us in the audience could have a lively debate on whether that's going to raise costs or lower costs in the long run. I don't really think it would be real helpful for the commission to be deciding what could and couldn't be allowed based on what that is. So I have a personal just concern mechanically that that second sentence is problematic and is going to be open to a lot of interpretation. But again, if that's something the legislature wants the commission to look at, we certainly can do so. I mean, there's nothing that we couldn't do it. I just think it would open some doors that aren't open right now, I think.
Mr. Fuller?
Madam Chair, just one point, which is that first sentence in Section 3 then makes that an absolute law, which I assume was what was intended. Whether or not it's necessary or useful, that's gone. So that's clear. The sort of the intellectual concern with that first sentence is that given the intent of the House, they want to limit the ability to recover from ratepayers these sorts of expenses, but we're not sure whether we have defined the whole universe of the sort of expenditures that you feel should be absolutely prohibited. So we have to be very careful to make sure that the language can't, and maybe just make a public record, that there's no intention here that this language then allows other expenses to be recovered that otherwise wouldn't have been previously. And, you know, I think given the PUC's position now, that's not a credible concern in a sense because they don't allow them anyway. But, and I doubt if a utility would make that argument. But I think that's the concern that Mr. Bodden's working on now is to make sure, one, that we've sort of covered the sorts of activities that the proponents want to cover, and two, is we haven't opened up anything that you don't want to open up, which I think is a tiny concern, but it is a concern, but fairly small.
Thank you. Representative Holstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I ask, you talked about contributions to other organizations. So has the PUC permitted contributions to organizations to be reimbursable to ratepayers? For example, I can only think of one off the top of my head that, you know, does elections, for example. I know the chamber participates in elections. So are those currently allowed to be reimbursed through ratepayers?
Ms. Gonzalez.
Madam Chair, Representative. When the issue has been raised explicitly, the commission has often disallowed it. Certainly embedded in things like the dues to the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, for example, which we've generally allowed, there is probably some lobbying type expenses in there. So, I mean, I don't think in general there's been such a minute look. I don't think that first sentence would cover that, though. But there has not been, in general, I know we did a number of things with, as I say, Edison Electric Institute dues and some of those. I just think it's sort of what's the cost-benefit of getting down into the, you know, $50 range when you're looking at that type of thing. I think in theory, in my personal opinion, in theory, any component of dues that goes toward lobbying should probably be disallowed. But as a practical matter, unless it's raised and somebody's really looked at it, it's probably so insignificant in general that, you know, there could well be some things embedded in there.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, it makes me think, I mean, if the Supreme Court decision does open a big door, which we don't really know under Minnesota law whether that will or will not happen, and the Chamber of Commerce starts soliciting donations from all its members to run their political, well, the Chamber already does this, so I guess that wouldn't even be, I don't know how that works if they take corporate contributions and then run campaign ads. Those are allowable now, I guess, even though they're funded by corporate members. This is getting beyond my knowledge of campaign law, so I don't know how this could change that situation. If they could be, there could be a new category of spending that went through sort of an intermediary organization, if that's what you're suggesting. That's a good question. Representative Abler.
Tonight, it's really kind of fun to join the energy world. I have a healthcare guy, an education, you know, this is. Do you mind if I ask a question? I'm a little ignorant of this. So these the expenses you don't approve go back to the shareholders, and like, do they get charged back a lot of expenses that they expect a certain amount of expenses to come off the top that shareholders absorb? Is it a, are they ever surprised, and is it like a big deal, or is it just normal business that you disallow a bunch of expenses? And does that make any sense to you?
Ms. Gonzalez.
Madam Chair, Representative Abel, yes, it makes, I understand what you're saying. Starting from the point, starting maybe from the other side of things, what should be collected in rates are, on an investment side, are things that are used and useful for providing utility service. On the expense side, things that are prudent and reasonable expenses, that's kind of fundamental to utility law. So anything that does not fit those categories is not allowed to be recovered in rates. So when you say a disallowance, that's sort of takes it from the other side, I guess. If a utility is asked for it and someone feels that it's not used and useful in providing utility service or not a prudent and reasonable cost, then it won't be allowed. And that's, I guess, expected, if you will. That's normal rate making in all, as far as I know, in all, 49 of the 50 states that and the District of Columbia and the federal government, and it's pretty standard philosophy in utility regulation.
Representative Abler, one of the reasons this bill came about in the first place is that the Attorney General said, this is something that's debated in every rate case. There's a number of issues that are debated at length between the utilities and other advocates and the Attorney General's office, et cetera, about what should be recoverable through rates and what shouldn't be. So there's some universe that's usually in question and argued over, even though a lot of things are sort of clear and always, not so much part of the debate. But the Attorney General's office came to us with this part of the bill that's in Sections 1 and 2 because they were very concerned that there were rate cases where utilities were requesting rate recovery for corporate jets and expensive hotels and restaurants and other kinds of entertainment and travel expenses that seemed inappropriate, and they were having trouble getting the details. And that's why we have a disclosure bill that doesn't change what they can recover, but it just says you have to provide the details so that they don't have to spend hours and hundreds of hours fighting over it. And we can have the information. There will be transparency for the public and for all the participants. And then it did allow them to narrow down on finding out what, when you have a corporate jet, how much of the time is it being used to, as the most reasonable means of transporting the executives or the board to a board meeting, and how much time is for other things that might not be so related to utility service, like going to a retreat at a resort or whatever. So that's, that's sort of one of the underlying issues for this bill, is to make sure that we're protecting ratepayers from things they really shouldn't have to pay for. And so that law is pretty well established about what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, what's within the purview of rates. But I hope that's helpful. But
well,
Representative Abel.
Well, I appreciate that, and thanks for bearing with me. But it seems to me
you the same thing in a healthcare conference committee.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Well, it's kind of fun to be with all of you. you're not going to invite me back again, probably. But maybe you will. But it seems like you have a really well worked out bill that you've worked really hard on, on these two sections. And section three is this little novelty the thought that came along the way, which got picked up as an amendment, which hasn't been vetted with anything approaching the thoroughness of the first two sections of the bill, which may in fact spark some controversy about your bill, which otherwise gets probably all green in both bodies, which is what I expect.
Well, Representative Abler,
role is to help you get your bill passed.
No, I appreciate that, and I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's why because these floor amendments are really what we're discussing, which didn't have a chance to be debated in committee. Maybe we should see if there's any testimony, if any other stakeholder. Are there any other questions for Ms. Gonzalez? Okay, thank you so much. And just see if any of the utilities or the department or anyone else would like to speak to this and give us their point of view. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I interpreted Representative Abler pointing at me as an invitation to come up. Perhaps that was presumptuous of me. So was there a question?
Well, Director Glahn, do you have any opinion about Section 3 of this bill?
Well, Madam Chair, as you know, I have an opinion about everything, and sometimes more than one. So I guess from our standpoint, and I think that was a fair characterization from Representative Abler, this was something we hadn't gone through committee, we hadn't had a chance to vet it or take testimony on it, et cetera, et cetera. And I apologize because I've been in and out a couple of times from your committee here for other things. And so I probably haven't heard all of the discussion that's gone on this afternoon, but I guess we're still working on what problem we're trying to solve here and whether, as a practical matter, I would see it very, very unlikely that these sort of expenses would be recovered. That is something out of the realm of what a utility normally does in its course of delivering energy or other services to its customers. So it seems it's more of a hypothetical than anything else. No one's brought to my attention an instance where this sort of behavior has gone on and rate recovery has been allowed. So I'm not sure that we actually have a real problem here that we're trying to solve. But again, some of the discussion is centered around the Citizens United case and what changes that might be. Would this be more of an issue going forward? And I think those are legitimate questions to ask. But then I'm not sure this is the vehicle in which to answer them. You know, this is the whole Citizens United corporate involvement in politics is well beyond sort of the narrow issue of Chapter 216B setting rates for retail customers. You know, if we want to go and exercise this whole issue, then there's perhaps some other elections bill or something like that would be a better vehicle for that. So at a threshold level, I'm not sure we have a problem. And if we do have a problem, whether this is really the vehicle we should be addressing the solution through. And then just from having heard some of the debate on the House floor when this was put forward and adopted, and then the amendment to the amendment was adopted, I think there was an amendment to the amendment to the amendment that didn't get through, but that was sort of the nature of that debate, that we do have a little bit of, I think, if I understood Representative Anderson's effort, on the House side, was trying to put some symmetry to this, that if there were a situation, Representative Abler brought up the cap-and-trade example, I could imagine, a constitutional amendment on public benefit surcharge or something like that, where a utility thought it really was in the best interest of their ratepayers that they should get involved in something where they have the ability to do action on a collective basis where individual ratepayer like myself wouldn't be able to participate, and then they would want to be involved. And what we're saying is, with the language there is today, that they could do that if they could make a showing that it really was in the best interest of ratepayers to get cost recovery from it. Otherwise, I don't know why they would bother. If they couldn't get cost recovery from it, it was something the shareholders would have to eat. And, you know, they're a pass-through entity anyway, so, you know, why bother to get involved? I guess it gets to the role of the ratepayer. Are they the stewards of ratepayer money? The role of the utility. Are they the stewards of ratepayer money? Are they supposed to try to act in the best interest of ratepayers in this environment or not? And that's what I understood the House Representative Anderson's amendment to the amendment was trying to accomplish, trying to balance the interest here and not say, no, you should never do this, but allowing for the possibility there might be circumstances in which it would be appropriate. But back to my original observations, as a practical matter, I'm not sure this does anything. And as a beyond that, I just have concerns that we're using this as a vehicle to as part of a much larger debate that rightfully belongs elsewhere. So,
thank you very much, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Glahn. I think that you would agree that the public utilities, because they're a regulated industry, they're subject to different laws, and I think we haven't heard explicitly from council, but the Citizens United decision certainly did change things. And however, because they're a regulated industry and because we're trying to deal with costs here that are recoverable from ratepayers, I think it is fair and appropriate to address this in legislation. Now, perhaps, you know, because of the 216B.16 subdivision 8 already being in statute, that already applies. But I don't think anyone is trying to suggest that Citizens United changes that, for instance. So the amendment that was offered in the House, I think, is appropriate to this language because it, in some way, is backing up what is already in existing law. Perhaps it doesn't go far enough in what we're trying to do. But to somehow say that because the Citizens United decision came down, this isn't the appropriate place to attach this because the overall legislation is talking about expenses that can be put back on ratepayers, I think it is appropriate to address this here. But maybe, Mr. Bodern, if you could comment on the Citizens United case and how and whether it would apply to costs associated to it that can be recovered by ratepayers. Or I guess my question really is, does the Citizens United case change any existing law as it relates to advertising expenses or if that makes any sense. So, in other words, does the Citizens United decision change anything under current law does the Citizens United decision change anything because it's a regulated industry?
Mr. Bodern?
Madam Chair and Senator Steven, it's certainly an open question. It's clear enough that Citizens United, the holding in Citizens United, was limited to, or at least dealt with, privately held corporations and what they did with money that was not publicly regulated.
It's interesting.
I think the expenditure at issue, well, actually it was a nonprofit corporation, but none of that money was in any way subject to public regulation, the way the ratepayer expenses are here. So I don't know that you could say there's a conclusive effect on how public utilities in Minnesota could use their ratepayer recovery for campaign expenditures. I wish I could be more definite, but they didn't reach that issue. The court didn't.
So, Mr. Glahn, let me just make sure I understand your position on this. Do you think it would do any harm to be explicit about saying no rate recovery for election-related expenses?
Madam Chair, and again, I hope I'm not misrepresenting what Mr. Fuller has taught me. I forgot my usual disclaimer. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not a lawyer. But one of the things, at least I've learned from Mr. Fuller, is legislatures don't legislate for no reason. You know, laws aren't passed, they're passed for a reason. So given my understanding, or at least my belief, maybe it's more a belief than an understanding, my belief that this sort of thing wouldn't happen either through because current law is sufficient to cover it or current practice at the commission is sufficient that this wouldn't be a concern, that by putting this language in, you're doing it for a reason. And I'm afraid, or my concern would be that somebody would reach beyond just the narrow issue of rate recovery and look toward perhaps larger issues of corporate free speech. So there's my non-lawyer's concern about this, that maybe we're going beyond just the narrow issue and this opens up more of an avenue for people to look at these larger issues of people participating in efforts. And then, again, my recollection as a non-lawyer that contributions from corporations to candidates has been prohibited by law for more than 100 years, and it continues to be prohibited by law, notwithstanding the recent decision by the Supreme Court. So are we looking toward you know, are we going to start reading stuff into this? Like, for example, you heard much in the news the last week about Goldman Sachs and their contributions to candidates, and you know, is it compensation officers who then go make individual contributions, and the compensation officers is recovered in rates? I don't know. Maybe I'm reading something into this, but I guess I'm concerned that somebody else will go through these thought processes and we'll get deeper and deeper into the weeds.
Okay. Well, Mr. Glad, I agree with you that we should not be putting any kind of legislative requirements in this bill or in this section of law that relate to the ability of corporations to influence elections. That's not in our purview. But I don't think that's affected by this language. And I think we're just focusing on if the state goes down that road in the elections committee or in the courts, we just want to make sure that it doesn't fall on ratepayers and the corporation can do whatever it wants. Outside of, you know, according to whatever other Minnesota laws would apply or constitutional laws would apply. So I just want to, I mean, I don't know if we could really say that in here. I don't want to express an opinion one way or the other about whether a corporation can make a political contribution in this bill. I don't think it would be appropriate to go down that road in this piece of legislation. But I think it is appropriate to comment on expenses that ratepayers pay for. So I guess, have you had a chance to talk to the governor's office about this, Mr. Glahn? Do we have any opinion from the governor on this that you're aware of?
Madam Chair, I have not spoken with the governor on this bill, any aspect of it. In my conversations with the governor's office, it was much more they're asking me questions than my soliciting their opinions on it. So they're very much, because it was an amendment put on the House floor, they're still very much in the asking questions stage and trying to figure out, formulate an opinion on it. So I'm perhaps getting a little bit ahead of the game by expressing an opinion this afternoon.
Representative Abler.
Actually, to that question, I sent an emissary down to ask them that very question. And the dance that they do was a curious one, even for one who's bilingual. But the answer that came back was they'd prefer it not be in there. I don't know what that means beyond that. I think a part of it depends upon the vote tallies on the return, and their positions are fluid depending upon the points of view of some of their stakeholders and members that are allied there. And you know how controversial elections things can get over the most minute of things, and so that's the only thing I can tell you for sure.
That, Representative Ayler, that they prefer that all of Section 3 not be in here? Is that what you were?
That's how I took it. You have a worked-out bill that's been this. You know, that's how I took it. And I mean, on the floor, the debate was why are we doing election stuff on a utility bill? And so many elections amendment were offered, and this bill has actually achieved a life of its own in terms of the enthusiasm about this section from my comrades. And so more than if it just were the language as it. Were in its own bill, but it became elevated to that. So I can only tell you that message. And I think the House members can relate that.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me enlighten the conference committee. The amendment was first offered, and it went on the bill. And then there was a motion to reconsider, and many members of the Republican caucus who had originally voted to put the amendment on voted to take the amendment off. The amendment did stay on. It did have enough votes, and then the bill did pass overwhelmingly, but there was a bit of a fight on the floor.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, you and I both care a lot about passing this bill. We've worked very hard on it, and I think we both agree that it's really important and will serve the public interest. So I don't want to jeopardize it, and I doubt that you would want to either. I guess we need some advice on that, and perhaps the senators. I don't know if the senators have any thoughts about whether keeping any of this language could jeopardize this bill. I mean, I know it's speculation. Senator Dahl, any opinions?
Yeah, Madam Chair, listening to the testimony, I thought I would be very comfortable leaving Section 3 in except for the last sentence based on what Ms. Gonzalez has told us and what seems to be basic principles in law already. But that was my question. I mean, will this be such a fight on the floor? Unless we can all agree as a conference committee that we do agree to it, but then it would be easily pulled, correct or not? Is that an option?
What's it?
If it became a controversial issue, that section? This has to be it, right?
Once we pass it as a conference committee and sign it,
okay,
it's up or down. And so the only, it's either we could pass it on the floor or send it back to conference committee or defeat it on the floor. the only option there I would like is the pass one. Senator Dibble. I'm sorry, Senator Fredrickson, did you have your hand up?
Well, as long as you're kind of doing a pre-vote tally. I actually like the language, and with or without that second sentence, though the second sentence is a little confusing. So it probably will need a little work if it stays in. It would be hard, I think, for anyone who were to vote against or to veto a bill like this to be able to explain to the public that the bill was defeated or vetoed because we wanted to allow your money to be used directly against your self-interest or your money to be used to promote or defeat candidates from political parties of which you were not, not supporting or not a member. This is not stopping utilities from doing whatever they feel like they need to do to conduct their business, with direction from their management and their shareholders and the like. I simply would say that the dollars they received in a direct reimbursement from utilities out of your bill, outside of the profit that they're made, built into the base of money that they use just to do the basic day-to-day operations, would be disallowed. This is not stopping businesses from being able to do anything. This is about dollar-for-dollar recovery from ratepayers. So that's my putting a dollar into Excel's bank account, which they can take out and go and promote a candidate who I wouldn't necessarily support, or a ballot initiative that I wouldn't support.
Senator Dibble, I really agree with you that I think it's important for us to really draw a line in the sand that ratepayers should not be paying for these expenses. But I guess the question is that going to get our bill in trouble in this as it stands? Senator Fredrickson?
Well, Madam Chair, since there is some ambiguity about whether or not it would get the bill in trouble or not, since all the work that's already gone in this bill, why would we risk that? I'm sorry, I had to come late. I apologize for that. But in reading that subdivision 18, I saw a problem with that last sentence also. That could be way too subjective.
Yes.
And I certainly agree with the intent and the thrust of the first part of this subdivision, but I'm not sure it should be in this bill. I would like to see the bill become law.
And Senator Dibble, I think you were suggesting it would, how could anybody be against the idea of protecting ratepayers? So that would make it, that would help protect it, I guess, was your theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we can chew on that. It would be helpful to have a little more direct feedback from the governor's office, but that's pretty rare to get direct feedback. So I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for that.
So
Senator Dibble.
So in light of that, that is often been the case, as we've learned over these last 8 years. We're the legislature, and we have our own election certificates, and we represent our constituents and the best interests and the highest ideals of public policy that we're trying to pursue. So, if the governor's not going to engage in any meaningful way. I mean, I've also heard the commissioner express concerns about Section 2 as it is. So I'm not convinced that the bill, even without Section 3, gets passed or gets signed into law. So, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, and people can be accountable to their own constituents as such.
Put it in the disclosure section.
Well, members, I'm not proposing this as I don't think we've quite resolved whether what we should do on Section 3, but I'm thinking perhaps at a minimum we should require disclosure of these kinds of expenses, which is what the point of the first part of the bill is, and that's something we haven't really considered before, that perhaps but then it might, you know, maybe that would send a signal that it's okay to spend that money. So I don't know. Maybe that's not such a great idea. Senator Frederickson?
Madam Chair, I was just agreeing with your latter statement.
I'm just thinking out loud, as you can tell, so I need to finish the thought process, I guess. Representative Portman?
Madam Chair, what I heard Representative Abler saying is that on his side of the aisle there was a lot of concern about the issue of ballot questions and their belief that in certain cases a ballot question could cause a significant cost for ratepayers. In that situation, it might be appropriate for, in their eyes, for a utility to recover those expenses. I think it seems like there's common ground, however, that we don't want, we're all clear on the idea, we don't want utilities giving money to candidates or maybe political parties. And so maybe the portion of Representative Faulk's amendment, the first sentence of Section 3 that the Republicans didn't really like that well was on line 2.33, all the words after office. Perhaps if that sentence would have stopped at candidates for public office, that would have maybe addressed their concern, and maybe if we would have talked about the problem with the amendment instead of amending the amendment.
Representative Portman, I appreciate that input. That's very helpful. I guess I would raise two things. One is I was going to suggest that we do something a little broader, such as expenses incurred on elections-related expenditures or something like that. I mean, I think the fear that some of us have is if we just limit it to candidates, then we might be giving the impression that other expenditures and ratepayer recovery for those are okay, that are elections related. So then we'd sort of be giving the implication, because we're not specifically prohibiting it, then it's okay. So that would be the only, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I think that would be a reasonable limitation, but what implication could that give by the silence about other things?
And
Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, I'd just add, too, that if you don't include approval or defeat of a ballot question, there are obviously political campaign committees that are set up that then if the utility was allowed to give directly to them, then those organizations can also give money to candidates. So it could be an indirect way of still influencing who is elected to office. So, Senator Anderson, I like your idea of expanding it more to include all election-related expenses.
But our Representative Portman.
This is a House conferee trying to bring something back to the House that won't create World War III and respects the votes that were taken on the House floor. You know, I agree with you. By leaving out ballot questions, we maybe by implication are saying that's okay. Except for we do have very clear testimony from the PUC that an expense has to be reasonably related to the provision of service to the customer. And that this type of expense was not really in the realm of things that they ever contemplated approving. And that the utilities don't even ask for because it's outside of that area. And I know we're in a new world after the Citizens United case, but perhaps to more fully address that issue, we need a bill that goes through the elections committees and through the energy committees. And where we are now is with a very good bill prohibiting certain expenses from being passed along to ratepayers, and then a provision that we can either provide some protection to ratepayers for political contributions, or we can provide no protection, or we can provide a lot of protection and then maybe get a bill vetoed. So I'm just, among those choices, kind of trying to look for something that we can get through the House where we still accomplish part of what we need to do, and we get the bill signed.
Representative Abler.
A
Thank you, and I appreciate the dialogue. I've never been on elections conference committee either, so this is a two firsts for me in one day. And the reason, and I know that you, Senator, have spent a good deal of time on those, and you know how dicey it gets. and I think Representative Hortman has a suggestion that this topic deserves the respect that it should get, and it wouldn't be coming from me as the voice of understanding this topic and the nuance, knowing so little about, you know, energy as I do, and the nuances of I'm not a lawyer for election law. I spent my time in healthcare still, remember. But so I fear that the suggestion you have about elections matters only broadens the argument about a free speech thing. If you've been following our governor candidates and where they're going in their rhetoric, it's interesting discussion. And so you would be walking into that just for fear. And I think at the end of the day, the House should just recede from its amendment and keep this bill clean and go home with a really nice bill that you've worked so hard to get. And I think efforts to rescue something out of this part may give you something that's meaningless anyway in the name of saving some words. So that's my suggestion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I just need to say again, this is confined to the question of direct rate recovery. Dollar-for-dollar recovery from ratepayers. It's not confining anyone's freedom of action or speech, whether that's a corporate entity or an individual. We need to keep our debate focused to that question. Is this something that ratepayers should be paying for directly, activities of utilities to engage directly in elections or ballot questions? Not getting into free speech or freedom of activity or anything that a company feels like it needs to do as a company.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given the fact that this amendment came from the House, I think that it is probably incumbent upon us to have some conversations with the governor's office. And I guess I would request, Madam Chair, that you give us some time to do that. And I think there have been a lot of options given, and I think we heard from the PUC that it's current practice. And I think that it might be good to see if there isn't some language we could come up with that the governor could live with.
I think that's a good suggestion, Representative Hillstrom. And Senator Stephen, did you have your hand up?
No, I was just going to reiterate what Senator Dibble said, that, again, it's one question whether Citizens United obviously would allow Excel, for instance, to directly influence an election now after that ruling. But I do think that we're just talking about what's permitted under direct rate recovery, and so that is where the legislature or we as a state have the authority to restrict how directly recovered expenses that come from ratepayers can be used to influence an election. So that's why I think it is incumbent on us to try to come up with some sort of language that addresses this, that, again, only applies to rate recovery, not to what a utility can do outside of those expended dollars.
It's not about free speech. It's about who pays for that speech. That's what we're talking about. And I don't think it should be ratepayers. All right, I think we'll the House is going to go into session in a few minutes, so I think we should take a recess, members, and we don't know how long the House session will go. It would be great if we can come back in a couple of hours, depending on everybody's schedule. You know, I'm not intending to meet tonight, so, you know, if we can come back and have some kind of suggestions for where to resolve this, then we'll call you back. Maybe if members could let us know what your schedules are this afternoon, if committee members have conflicts. I know we all have a retirement party tonight in the Senate. Okay. Senator Fredrickson?
Sure. We have a finance committee at 3:30.
Correct. That's right. And I'll be there, too. So I think we just maybe have one bill. So it wouldn't be before. Well, I presume the House wouldn't be done for a couple of hours either. So probably wouldn't be before 4:30. And then if we were able to wrap this up today, that would be fantastic. Otherwise, I guess we'll just have to come back next week. Can we probably can't meet tomorrow, correct, as the convention, we're recessing. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe that the goal of the House is to have everyone be able to leave by 5 because
today.
Because I believe a number of the Republican caucus is going to the convention today. Is that correct, Representative Abelin?
There's preparations. There's something going on with two candidates running for an office. Madam Chair, I just heard that the House, that the session's been delayed till 3. That's what I just heard from staff.
Oh, really?
So maybe we're delayed. So maybe you can.
Maybe we can come back sooner.
Yeah.
Why don't we go now to see if we can hear from the governor's office?
Did I see another hand?
Oh, I just wanted
Senator Dibble.
I just wanted to welcome all the Republicans to Senate District 60 this weekend. Have a lovely time and spend a lot of money.
A lot of money, yeah. Hope they drink a lot.
All right, we're going to recess to the call of the chair, and members, it could be soon. So stay tuned, and we'll look forward to hearing back from the House. Committee stands in recess.